As a heads up, this episode was recorded after the news segment, which we record live 7 p.m. Eastern Fridays at betterondraft.tv, facebook.com/betterondraft, and twitch.tv/bodpodcast. Check us out on all of our social medias. That's Better on Draft on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Don't forget to download the Michigan Brewery Map app. That's mibeermap.com, a free map to find every single brewery in the state of Michigan. You can also friend us on Untapped Bod Podcast. See what we were drinking during each and every episode. Don't forget to check out our sponsors, Zatuna Liquor in Rochester Hills, just south of M59 on Rochester Road. North Center Brewing over in Northville, Michigan, just south of Baseline Road in North. And our Dry January sponsor, Reputation Beverage out of DeWitt, Michigan. You can get their cold brew as well as their ground and whole bean coffee right on their website. We appreciate you listening. Please enjoy this episode with Marty from Revolution Brewing in Chicago, Illinois.
Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 278. My name is Kent. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. We are excited. If you are listening to this, the audio may be a little weird simply because we went backwards this week. We did the news first and then we did the interview. Obviously, you hear the interview first when you're listening via the podcast, which of course you're subscribed to on iTunes. Don't forget to leave us a rating, but you can find us live Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern. Over at facebook.com/betterondraft or betterondraft.tv. Once again, my name is Ken. Right now, I am drinking, continuing with my dry January from Untitled Art, a watermelon goza. Dan, what do you got over there? Dan, you are muted or not chatting.
I pulled a Nick. Sorry about that.
Good job, Dan.
Yeah, I know. I learned from you so often. I'm drinking this Gravis Peanut Butter Dark is what I'm working on.
Well, Nick, what do you got over there?
I'm working on my Never Have I Ever double from Drekker, and I just cracked open a Blake's Blueberry Lemonade.
Well, Nick's working for us to drink that alcohol. Rob, what do you got?
Oh, California knows how to party. Bottle Logic's Broken Blender, a tiki cocktail stout that is a imperial stout aged in rum barrels.
And Wendy?
I am still working on this 2020 sextuple barrel from Big Bad Baptist.
Well, thankfully, Nick, Rob, and Wendy are doing their part to make sure that we're drinking enough beer on this show that is alcoholic. We do have a guest, though, in studio. We appreciate him joining. Why don't you introduce yourself, tell us who you are, and what you do with the company that you work for.
Greetings. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. My name is Marty Scott. I operate the barrel program for Revolution Brewing in Chicago, Illinois. I've been working with Revolution since 2010 in an unofficial capacity, kind of like a volunteer observer kind of thing, in an official capacity since the summer of 2011. Our organization, our Revolution Brewing, started in February of 2010 in Chicago on Milwaukee Avenue, on the north side in the neighborhood of Logan Square. About 2.5 years later, we opened up our production space about 1.5 miles away in neighboring Avondale neighborhood in Chicago on Kedzie Avenue, where we're probably finished this year around 70,000-80,000 barrels. I haven't gotten the official figures, but we are Illinois' largest independent craft brewer and have been for most of our history. And we specialize in balanced beers, both traditional and newfangled. Like I said, I operate the barrel operations, mostly barrel focused, but we do get playful with adjuncts from time to time. Our favorite beers are traditional styles, pilsners, English styles. I'm enjoying a Revolution Brewing Working Man Mild right now. Nice 3.5% grown up beer. I don't know what else to say for an intro, but thank you so much for having me on. It's my pleasure.
That's perfect. I answered all the questions we had. Nick, what's up?
I got to say, like, he's drinking an English mild. Is there any chance that we can get some of that in Michigan or, you know, for Dan in Arizona? Is there any chance that we can get some of that? Because we love our English milds on this show. Just wanted to open with that right from the get-go.
That's awesome. It's great to hear. Sadly, this was one of our first batches. It may have even been batch one, Working Man Mild. Kind of a working person's theme from the early days of Revolution. And this was the, if memory serves, maybe the first batch that we've ever produced at Kedzie. It's traditionally only been a pub beer. So we canned it with like an American / English hoppy brown ale called Working Woman. And they released in mixed four packs, two of each. It was just this ones we wanted to do it for our 10th anniversary 2 years ago, but COVID, you know, kind of ruined all of our plans. We're very stoked that we got around to making this beer on the big system with all of our toys. Not that an English mile demands a lot of toys and high tech equipment, but this beer certainly hasn't suffered for it. We'd love to get this beer up north towards you and down into Arizona next time we do it. We don't distribute to Arizona, so you'll have to know somebody for that. But Michigan, yeah, we distribute to Michigan. This may have just been too low a volume to make it up out of state.
Well, we had interviewed a year and a half ago or so, back in episode 243, Greg Hall. So we got a really good in-depth information regarding barrel aging. Obviously, he is the inventor of the Bourbon County brand Stout. But I want to talk to you because you have something called the Sanctuary Barrel Program. Why don't you explain to us what the Sanctuary Barrel Program is? Was this your idea? And what the goal of the program is for?
Okay, great question. Sadly, the answer is just so practical that it may be a disappointment to some. Years ago, barrel aging was much more the Wild West than it is today, as far as barrel suppliers and our own experience and know-how. Back when I took the reins of the program in 2013 or thereabouts, we were pretty much everybody in town was using the same barrel supplier, and a lot of the barrels were fantastic, but far too many were leaky. And you know, we got really good at patching barrels and tightening hoops and solving those problems, but in so many cases barrels were just too far gone. And in the instances where we had leaky barrels but the laboratory reported that the beer was still good, we decided to just transfer that beer out of one leaky barrel into another fresh bourbon barrel to rescue it from the mop, essentially, because that's where it was going otherwise. And so we called it the Sanctuary. I named it after a rock song. A band called Elder out of Boston had an album that I was really keen on at the time. And the first track was called Sanctuary. And I was rescuing this beer. I was listening to this song. And I didn't tell anybody what I was doing. I think I only told the brewmaster, and I intentionally didn't tell anybody else. Then put Project Sanctuary on the front of all these barrels that I had kind of rescued, and put it out for the public to see. And I just waited for the questions to start rolling in. Built a little bit of hype kind of underground like that. And now we've released these beers to promote our mainstay barrel aged beers that we release at the brewery a couple times a year. So these are typically draft variants. The initial Sanctuary was just 25 barrels that we produced. We consumed about 33, 34 leaky barrels. And when the first leaky barrel was empty, the receiving barrel, that new fresh barrel, wasn't quite full. So we'd move on to the second leaky barrel, to top it up. And then that first Sanctuary barrel was full and the second leaky barrel still had a lot of beer in it. So we go to the next Sanctuary barrel. So we just kind of, filled these beers, and we tried to keep the blends, cohesive within brand. So stout and not stout got put into the same Sanctuary barrels. Then we aged for a minimum of an extra year on top of that to make all these cool, unique one-off double barrel program or double barrel projects. Those beers that had sufficient sugar content, malt content to back up you know, the 16 to 18% ABVs that we were seeing from double barrel aging. Those were served on the front end of the program. And then we had the other half of the beers were dry components. We make sweet and dry components for all of these beers so that we can have kind of a dynamic aging process. And then we marry them back together to hit the exact targets that we intended as a control mechanism. So long story long, a lot of these sanctuary barrels were dry components that got double barrel aged. And those are obviously not very fun to drink right away. So, you know, what we're 40 months out from that, 3.5 years later. And all those beers that were once too dry and too boozy for human consumption have had an opportunity to have their sugars concentrate through evaporation, or evaporative concentration as we refer to it as, where the water and alcohol are evaporating at similar rates, but the sugar stays behind. So it just concentrates. So as we age and age and age these really dry double barrel aged, super oaky, super boozy beers, a couple of years in, 40 months in, we're finding that even these dry components are just totally unique and very drinkable. The sugar concentration is up to a point where we would consider it fit for human consumption. And that's the practicality of Project Sanctuary. Because our barrels have become so much tighter with working with Midwest Barrel Company for the last like 5 years exclusively, we just today designated the next three leaky barrels to go into the sanctuary. We haven't had barrels that we couldn't patch in almost 4 years at this point. Kind of a sad story when you have to lose a barrel, but it's, you know, we're turning it into an opportunity. We're making a lot of lemonade from this kind of approach.
I want to go back to the barrels, but I wanted to ask this real quick, because as you're mentioning with Sanctuary being, a music theme coming from the name, obviously you've got the Marshall speaker behind you. When I heard Working Man, I was immediately thinking Rush, and then you've got Repo Man, which I'm thinking Iggy Pop. I mean, are there like, as these beers are being named, is there a lot of musical influence in naming a lot of the beers that you guys make?
Yeah, when we're really having the most fun with it, and we're trying to make a beer that maybe doesn't have to appeal to everybody because we're just going to do it once. We'd love to go to the jukebox for our names. The first series of beers we ever did, the Brew Pub, was the Repo Man soundtrack. We made a beer for every song on that soundtrack. Coup d'etat, which was our year-round saison for years. It was a track by the Circle Jerks. We did the Ballad of Repo Man, or the Theme of Repo Man, whatever it's called. I name all of my sour beers, or all of our sour beers that are not all the mixed fermentation, all like the Brett beers. Everyone that I've ever designed has been named after an Iggy Pop song or Stooges song. We, in the last year or so, received a C&D from Mr. Eddie Van Halen before his passing. We did a collaboration with Peace Pizzeria and Brewery here in Chicago called Little Dreamer. And it had the Frankenstein art on it with a guitar and wings on it. It was beautiful, extra pale ale. We had to destroy most of it because that C&D came in lightning quick from Mr. Van Halen. We still observe Van Halen Friday at the brewery. So every Friday we listen to at least one David Lee Roth era Van Halen album in its entirety, and have done so for better part of 10 years. I'm wearing a Motorhead shirt right now. Iron Fist was our first English pale ale that we had year round at the brew pub for a number of years. Yeah. We love the tunes.
All right. And for Van Halen, is it always David Lee Roth like me, or does Sammy Hagar get in there at all?
No, we have tremendous respect for Sammy Hagar. The Red Rocker was fantastic. It's a lot like Dio and Sabbath. It's fantastic music. It's not quite the same. But
you got to get the Gary Cherone album in there too once in a while, don't
yeah.
you? We're going to go down that road.
Yeah. Jim Seback, Brewmaster, is a huge Van Halen, Sammy Hagar era fan. I think he's still mostly David Lee Roth, But I mean, DLR era Van Halen just sounds like a party, doesn't it?
Am right.
It's a fantastic something to listen to really loud in a brewery on a Friday to let everybody know, hey, the weekend's almost here. We can start having a little bit of fun.
Oh, yeah. For first album I ever heard in its entirety was 1984, and I hadn't looked back. So and awesome. Then I went back to Diver Down and Women and Children First. So I yeah, without a doubt. So I want to go back to the barrels. And, you know, a big component about using barrels for barrel aging is consistency. We've always seen that where, you know, you typically don't know what you're going to get out of a wooden barrel. Obviously, you want to be able to age these beers for about a year. I think I actually heard an article that in some hope that you guys will start aging in maybe 2 or even 3 years, even beyond that. I guess I'm curious what's done at Revolution to ensure the consistency of the beers that, and obviously the Cafe Dietz series and all of those barrel aged beers to make sure that those beers are coming out consistently. And I guess as a kind of a two-parter, has the barrel aging process in making beers gotten easier over time?
Ah, great questions. Firstly, consistency is the enemy of improvement, and we are always trying to improve. So we're never trying to replicate. We're always trying to do a better job. But there are certain things we do want to be consistent about, to be predictable, to be reliably high quality, to regularly meet or exceed the standards of our consumers who are going out of their way to shell out their hard-earned cash for a $25 four-pack or $50 four-pack of 12-ounce cans. So for consistency, I'd say we've created our own metrics. I alluded to it with those dry components becoming sanctuary barrels, where we have to wait until there's enough sugar concentration there to support that alcohol. So we have one thing we call balance value, and it's simply an expression of how the beer drinks. You know, with a pale ale or an IPA, you have finishing gravity and you have IBUs, right? Those are your two big kind of balancing points, maybe alcohol's in there as well. But with these big, especially English style barley wines and imperial stouts, after a year or several of aging, IBUs, you know, that's not something that you can really use to balance it. So we looked at just alcohol and sugar concentration, and that relationship we call balance value. So we just divide finishing gravity expressed in degrees Plato by alcohol by volume post barrel. And that typically two digit decimal tells us how lean and woody that beer is going to be, or how sweet and kind of malt complex that beer is going to be. There are certain things like oak tannin we can't quite quantify. So we still rely on sensory and reblending for control on that when necessary. But, you know, a couple of years ago, we got the principal brew crew together in the tasting lab. We tasted the previous two vintages of all the barrel aged beers. And we said, okay, if you divide finishing gravity by alcohol content, this is what this number is. This is how malty it is. This is how boozy it is. Do we think the best expression of this beer is a little bit maltier or a little bit hotter? And we kind of educated ourselves on this made up metric, the balance value. And we said, okay, now that we're brewing sweet and dry components, halfway through the aging process, we'll sample, 10 or so barrels from every lot, every batch and every barrel variety that we have. And we'll get the ABV and the sugar concentrations for those lots. And then we bring them back together in blending so that the finished product has the goal relationship of sugar and alcohol. That way, D-Star, Cafe Dietz, Straight Jacket, Rye Way to Heaven, those beers could be 12.5 ABV 1 year. They could be 16 ABV the next. But the sugar changes with it. So it always drinks like Straight Jacket, always drinks like Rye Way, it always drinks the same way. maybe not the same way, but it puts it in the ballpark. So we don't have a year where it's just terribly dry or a year that it's just super sweet and flabby. Having those two or even a dozen pretty disparate components that we can bring back together methodically ensures that we can put together a consistent product that's also going to have a lot of complexity. And that allows us to do that dynamic aging, put the age on those sweet components that they really demand to get that certain depth of flavor and aroma, as well as oak extraction.
Now, you know, looking at barrel aged beers, I feel like, you know, some people, myself included, tend to be focused on the taste of the bourbon coming from the beer. But lately, as I've kind of matured as going into being a bourbon drinker, and I think I honestly think it's because of the quality of the bourbon I've been getting lately. I've just kind of thought, you know, bourbon is bourbon, and until my buddy got me a bottle of Weller. And then I got a taste of a Pengree, and then a taste of Rip Van Winkle, that I started to notice and pay attention to the taste that was coming from the barrel itself. And so I wanted you to talk about how important the wood is to the process and how you want the wood and the flavor from the wood to be incorporated in the beer you produce.
That's a fantastic question. And I'm sure if any of my coworkers are listening right now, they're laughing, rolling their eyes about how much time I'm going to spend answering this question. I could go on for hours. I could go on for hours. Wood is definitely my favorite component here. It's the Deep Wood series from Revolution Brewing. And wood is so dynamic. French oak, Hungarian, American. But then you also have the previous life of these barrels. You know, how extracted are they? For my money, the biggest difference between a 12-year-old bourbon and a 20-year-old bourbon is the evaporative concentration. That barrel is totally neutralized after a decade, maybe even less, on some of these high test spirits. What's increasing the oak's presence is the evaporation of the non-flavor and aroma active components. The water and the alcohol, as they evaporate, they leave the oak behind for the most part. So as your volume decreases, the concentration of all your flavor and aroma activity increases. So less yield, of course, but all that flavor and aroma intensity is still in that barrel. You just have much less liquid to go around. We see the same thing with the beer, but the beer is much higher sugar concentration, so it becomes a much more dynamic liquid over time through oxidation than bourbons, rye, and spirits. But then we get to the barrel itself. We love the barrels because they're soaked with bourbon in the best cases. If you have a very old barrel that's totally stripped because the bourbon got everything good from it, unless that barrel is dripping wet, I'm sorry to say, that barrel's just a cool story, bro. You know, the whiskey's gotten everything good out of that barrel. And unless you can recoup that wood from the liquid, it's gone. So we love young barrels because maybe the whiskey isn't so sexy, but they're typically in much better shape, a lot less mopping to do. And the wood is much more active and expressive. And we can age and age and age and continue to extract rather than simply concentrate what was already there or left behind by the whiskey. Some great barrels that I've loved working with, Woodford Double Oak, because it's a toasted oak barrel that only sees 1 year of extraction, but the whiskey that gets put into it is already fully mature. So it's not this young, hot barrel. It's got whiskey saturated in the staves that's seen the first year out of two separate barrels, one charred and one toasted. There's plenty of lumber left in that barrel for us to extract, especially with these longer aging times, 2, 3, 5 years. So that's best of both worlds. The problem with those barrels is they're hard to come by and they can be really unreliable. You get a truckload of those if you're lucky enough to order a truckload at a time. You know, the first 20 barrels off that trailer were probably emptied last week, far out. The next 20 were probably emptied a month ago. Still pretty good. But the further into that truck that you get, the longer those barrels have tended to sit. So you have to be very careful when you're purchasing these barrels, knowing just how long they've sat empty. And you certainly don't want to get prize barrels and discover that they're too dry to fill. And now you have to rehydrate it and strip some of that whiskey out before you put your beer in it. It's heartbreaking. So for that reason, we love Cool Story barrels. We love Weller. We love Eagle Rare. We love all these hot shit spirits. But unless we know factually that these barrels were just emptied and not rinsed, it's a cool story, nothing else. It's impractical and it's no fun to have to wrangle those. And it's going to lead to a lot of mopping and less than what you'd anticipate when you tell someone this was aged in an Eagle Rare barrel. You know, already you've set the expectation. So there's got to be enough of that spirit carrying through to that beer, because the barrel itself is stripped. It's down to nothing. The only barrel left is in the whiskey.
All right. Well, bourbon barrels, the only time you can talk about wood that's young and hot and it not sound completely awkward. I'm passing it on to Wendy.
Just for yourself. So I'm going to change the topic a little bit, because even though I do love the Death series, I they're fabulous beers. And Freedom of Speech is actually one of my favorite beers. I like to travel. And one of my things is to go at least once a year out of state to visit other breweries. So, and I have been to Revolution. I actually went a couple years ago. We went to see Hamilton and made it a big thing. And I got to visit the brewery. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys have the garage doors in the front, right? That open up?
Yes. Our loading docks are all on Kedzie Avenue.
Revolution is actually the brewery that makes me tell everybody, I don't understand why Detroit doesn't do this. It's just ingenious. I thought it was the first brewery I'd been to that did that, and I just thought it was fabulous. I don't understand why we don't do it here more. Everyone's like, well, it's too cold, because you see it in the South a lot, but if Chicago can do it, why can't we? I just want to throw that out there. Back to my question. what is it... for the beer travelers out there, what is it about your brewery that should make us want to come in?
That's a fantastic question. And I'd like to say there are more breweries in the municipality of Chicago than any other municipality in the country. Coming to Chicago for beer, you're already on the right track. And there are so many fantastic, especially independent breweries in Chicago. We hope you come and see us, but you can have a complete trip even if you don't come to see us. If you don't see us, you probably actually have to hit Half Acre at least. At least one of those two. Metropolitan is also in our neighborhood. Off Color isn't too far. The list goes on and on and on. Like I said, more than in any municipality in the country. We make beers, again, for... I say this, and I don't mean to sound too callous about it, the adults in the room, the grownups who want their Pilsners and their Milds. We make kettle sours, Freedom of Speech. I mean, I love that beer too. I brought home a six pack of Freedom of Speech today myself for the weekend. Our barrel aged beer, we've in the last 2.5-3 years or so finally embraced hazy IPAs, and we're doing both kind of adult and more extreme versions of those as well. And we've also got the brew pub on Milwaukee Avenue. So we've got our restaurant, and they've got their own taps there as well. I think the quality and the balance and the history, we're a proven brewery in a very proven market. What I've heard is described as a very mature beer market, Chicago. We are a mature brewery. We're one of the, I think, first 10 maybe breweries in Chicago that are still operating today, from that first craft wave, or the most recent craft wave. We're just a couple weeks away from celebrating our 12th birthday. And there's, I think, less than 10 breweries in Chicago that are older than us still operating, at least the independents. You just can't go wrong with Revolution. No matter what time of year you come to see us, no matter which location, we've got something for everybody. And we've got a lot of styles that we think we do well, that we can turn you on to something that, oh, I don't like barley wines. Come have a seat with me and tell me that, that you don't like barley wines. And if you don't like barley wines after having one or two with me and talking about what goes into it and how we go about making it, then you're right. You don't like barley wines. We think we can make a beer fan or a beer drinker out of just about anybody walking down the street if you come pay us a visit.
That's fantastic. So I also wanted to mention, I was reading online about the Hazy Pitch is being added to the year-round lineup. Can you talk about that a little bit? You've got a couple of City Till We Die folks in the room. So it's not our FC, but I like to see other FCs being supported too.
Yeah, thanks. And I have to confess, the Hazy Pitch I haven't had a ton to do with the production, so I can't talk about recipe too much. I know it's a hazy pale. It's 5 ABV. As an old curmudgeon myself, who's kind of weary of the hazy styles, I love that beer. I've brought home 3-4 packs. It's the first time I've ever brought home a hazy beer that wasn't part of my take-home tasting panel. So it's the first hazy beer that I've ever consumed on purpose. And it's really approachable. I'm super sensitive to sulfur and a lot of the newer American hops and New Zealand, Australian hops just put me off being oniony. There's none of that in Hazy Pitch. And working with the Chicago Fire, this will be our second, I believe, and largest scale as far from a liquid standpoint, collaboration or association with a professional sports team here in Chicago. We've supported the Red Stars as well as we've had partnerships, and we still have a partnership at Sox Field at they're called Guaranteed Rate Field. Yes, Guaranteed Rate Field down the south side. We've got our own lounge there. A lot of us are footballers. We watch EPL Saturday and Sunday mornings and the afternoon, pretty much every weekend that it's on. We've got a ton of people who are from Mexico, from South and Central America. I don't want to say, well, of course they love soccer. Well, a lot of them do. World Cup and Olympics comes around, and all of a sudden there are rivalries between best friends at the brewery. We love a good football match. And working with the Chicago Fire, such an iconic name. A fun team to watch. They're playing in Soldier Field. And I wish I could tell more about the partnership. Of course, please go on the website, read about it. The Chicago Fire, they're talking about it too. It's a new year-round 16-ounce 4-pack. I believe it'll be poured on draft at the stadium at some of the craft locations. Still can be kind of hard to break in mainstream at a place like Soldier Field, where some of the larger domestics tend to dominate the business. But I believe it'll be on draft at the stadium, and we'll have it again year round in Chicagoland. And it'll probably mostly always be on draft. But we've got a lot more beers than we have taps, even having 20 taps or so at the tap room. If you're in Chicagoland, check out your local reputable beer shops. Check out Hazy Pitch.
Fantastic. And one more question before I hand it off to the next person. I want to go back because you mentioned a tasting pack.
Yeah, like a tasting panel?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when COVID arrived, rather than getting together and sharing beers and assessing them on their big five, their looks, their aroma, their flavor and texture, and kind of like overall quality and everything like that. We used to do that together, but it became less safe to do so. So all the beers that we make little 4-packs of, and we make a couple cases of them, and employees take them out of the QC fridge. We take them home. And we rate them on the Draft Labs Pro app on our phones. So some of us, we bring every beer that we package, every batch, we bring it home and we drink it in the evenings or the weekends, and we assess them and do our beer homework before we get into our casual just for fun drinking. So I have consumed a lot of hazy beers as part of tasting panel, and I think we do a fantastic job. I think I like our hazy beers mostly more than most other people's, but I still really don't gravitate towards them. But this Hazy Pitch is the first one that I've actually become a fanboy of and gravitated towards.
I need to have a talk with my boss. My day job needs to have something like that.
Yeah, Nick, I think so.
Nick, I'm going to pass it on to you.
I mean, I would like to go and do a trip to Chicago, too, for my job, too. But I don't ever see my job ever going to do anything for ComEd. But, oh, well, it is what it is. You had mentioned that you had been with Revolution for pretty much well over a decade, starting in unofficial capacity and then in basically right shortly after official capacity. Were you a home brewer at all prior to your time with Revolution, or were you with anyone else prior to that? Like what's the story? What's Marty's story? Like, how'd you get into beer, let alone being the head guy for Revolution's entire barrel program?
Thank you. It's a flattering question. This is my first beer gig. I was a home brewer for several years with my roommate. You know, on the weekends we go to the homebrew shop and we'd buy our grain or our extract and our hops, and we go home and we make terrible beer and we'd drink it and enjoy it and show it off to our friends. And you know, this was in, you know, the late aughts. And then I was working a job that I loved, I was working for a company that I loved and a job that I didn't love so much. And someone near and dear to me at the time encouraged me to, you know, give it up and just go to brewing school. You like beer and brewing so much. Why don't you go to brewing school? I said, what school? And they said, yeah, Siebel here in Chicago. It's the oldest brewing school in the United States. So I looked it up and got enrolled with the concise course, the little 2-week intense in-person course in April of 2010. And you know, graduated from my 2-week course and very shortly thereafter began volunteering with Revolution. It was about a year and a quarter, year and a half after that, when they finally had room for me on staff as a server, because they were expanding to the second floor of the restaurant in Milwaukee, the Brewer's Lounge. So they were hiring more cooks and more servers and more bartenders. Because I was already making the beer for free on my weekends, they saw fit to give me a shot at a high volume restaurant I had no business being a server at, other than knowing a little bit about the beer. I worked a couple days a week on the floor for about a year, and a couple days a week in the brewery for Jim Seaback, again, brewmaster Jim Seaback, employee number one, and senior brewer Maddie Kemp, who's also on the Little Crazy Can. Just working with those guys, and eventually Will Turner came over from Goose Island Brew Pubs when Jim and Maddie left to start the production facility. And as soon as they had room for me over there, as soon as we were ready to start producing and not just water boiling and everything, I went over to Kedzie full time. Spent 1 year trying to stay out of Jim's way and trying to make life a little bit easier for Jim and Maddie. And, you know, it was, after 1 year, basically, the barrel program was just a bridge too far for Mr. Jim Seaback to have to deal with. He was doing everything else. And he just kind of casually asked me if I wanted it. And I said, yes, I'll take it. So from 2013 on, I've been kind of lead operator on the program. And it's been a hell of a lot of fun. It's a lot more fun now than it used to be. It used to be every day was a roll of the dice. I was wondering when Josh Deeth, our owner, was going to get wise and fire my ass. I got good
still
enough.
Plenty
to,
of opportunities.
Yeah,
he hasn't listened to the podcast yet. Not that you've said anything wrong. Yeah,
I got familiar enough with it, you know, just doing it enough that, you know, I started to get kind of good at it, I think. And, you know, then it became fun. You know, we had fewer nasty little surprises that made me worry for my job. And now every day, I kid you not, is an absolute pleasure to go into that brewery and do barrel stuff.
Right. Dan, I'm going to pass it over to you.
All right. So One thing I've noticed out here lately with some breweries is they seem to be putting beers into barrels that you really don't expect and don't kind of have a lot of business once you try them, at least when they do them, into barrels. Are there any type of beers that you would step back from as far as someone told you, hey, we want to barrel age this, you know, whether it be a lighter type of beer, anything like that? Is there anything you wouldn't do when it comes to barrel aging a specific type of beer?
Yeah, I wouldn't have a single approach to barrel aging. You know, beer is beer, whether it's in an aluminum can, a glass bottle, a stainless steel tank, or an oak barrel. What lager likes, whether it's in wood or in a can or a bottle or a keg. You know, we recently did a barrel fermented and oak aged English mild. It was fucking divine. We used some spent Eagle Rare barrels that we aged some straight jacket barley wine in, loaded them up with this beautiful single origin French oak from the Troncay Fort Forest in France, and fermented this English mild in these spent Eagle Rare barrels and called it Where Eagles Rare. We took a portion of that, again, a Misfits song. Here's another music reference. Where Eagles Dare, Where Eagles Rare. Chris Duffy naming credit on that one. And then we kegged some off and we put more of this single origin oak in a keg and let some of this get really oaky. And then we blended that into more of that barrel fermented, but slightly less oaky stuff. And it was just, it was nuts. It was crazy how delicious it was. And it was really oaky and barrel forward for an English mild, but it still was a good English mild that had never been mistreated. I think if you want to barrel age a Pilsner, go for it. I'd think about keeping it cool. If you've got a hot brewery and no temperature control, I might shy away from, you know, lagering in a barrel, you know. But you know, wood and whiskey and spirit and wine, you know, none of these things are going to ruin any style of beer. I think the right kind of barrel, the right kind of spirit, the right kind of wine, the right kind of conditions, the right kind of contact time, the barrels with the correct amount of wood activity left in them, or employing other wood adjuncts or wood additives, you know, give me your best shot. Challenge me, you know, tell me there's something that we can't put in a barrel and make it taste awesome on the way out. And I'll do everything I can to make a fool of you.
That's a good answer. So I'm curious too, with being a lot of your beers being named after songs, bands, that sort of thing. Are there any bands you've worked with previously to collaborate with beer? And is there any band you want to collaborate with to make something?
Okay. Yeah, there's hundreds of bands I want to collaborate with, but it's not my brewery, you know, and one that I worked with, again, the band Elder, it was, right after they released, Reflections of a Floating World. It came out maybe 4 years ago or so. The first track on that is Sanctuary. So we named the Sanctuary program after that song. And then, they were doing a US tour to support, Reflections of a Floating World. And I said, hey, we're distributed in four of the states that they're going to be touring, Massachusetts, New York, Michigan, Illinois. And, wouldn't it be cool if we made a pub batch pale ale, like a good concert American pale ale, just like Crystal and Cascade, super dry, low bitterness, just like a perfect concert, American pale ale. And, I said, can we do it? You know, we can sell most of it, here at, in Chicago when they come here, and the other stuff we can sprinkle out. And they were gracious and they said, yes, let's do it. And that they is the brewery. They said, sure, we'll humor you and let you make a beer for this band. And I said, awesome. And I was at Psycho Fest in Las Vegas that year, the year Alice Cooper was headlining. Fantastic year. Best festival I think I've ever been to. Best festival lineup anyway. And Elder was playing and I passed them in the hotel hallway. I introduced myself and told them that I work for Rev and that I would love to someday make a beer with them that we could have on tap and a couple of their shows on the tour. And they were very gracious about it. They allowed me to have their their email address or their management's email address. It was really just Nick DeSalvo from Elder. And a couple months later, I got the green light and I shot him the message, said, "Hey, are you still interested?" And he goes, "Sure, sounds great." And we did it. And we were doing a collaboration with Jameson at the time and a festival that we were jumping in. It was the, what was the name of it? It was about neighborhoods and stuff. Like, it was like the Castmates Next Level kind of collaboration we did with Jameson. Well, they had a big festival for Castmates in Brooklyn the same time that Elder was playing in New York. So I flew out there for the Jameson event in New York, and then hopped on a train, saw Elder play their first show in Boston, their hometown, with the beer on tap. And then the next night they played New York. So we got to go to New York. I saw them the next night, again, beers on tap, see the show. And then about a week later, they arrived in Chicago, and we had the beer on at Reggie's. And all three locations, we didn't sell enough beer to the accounts. All the kegs were blown well before Elder took the stage, but it was better than, you know, nobody liking the beer and it not selling at all. But yeah, there's 100 bands I'd love to work with like that. Yeah, my job is a beer maker, not as a music promoter.
That's fair enough. I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Ken here.
Well, we appreciate you joining and talking with us. We are all going to collectively, or each of us is going to ask you one final question to kind of end the show, give you opportunity to promote, talk about what beers are out in Michigan, where people can find them, where people can find you. With that in mind, I will start because obviously we've talked a lot about barrels and spirits. One of my favorite places to go when I'm in Chicago, which is probably, you know, too often I don't get a chance. I choose not to. I don't know why, to not go to the breweries, but I have to go to Delilah's. Delilah's is like the be all end all. When I go there, I'm like, I need to go to Delilah's. I need to see what's available, what's there. Usually they have people, spirit reps. So there's usually free stuff too. What is your favorite at the moment? Cause this probably changes a lot. Your favorite, whiskey to go grab when you're at Delilah's.
Ooh, you know, I haven't had whiskey at Delilah's in ages. Delilah's Urban, is an institution.
Scotch, yeah.
To me, it's always been a beer destination, and I know they're serious about whiskey. Few better places in the world, probably, to just go into an unassuming looking place and have access to the rarest of the rare, and the best of the best. You know, I've been drinking a lot of the Jefferson's Very Old, Very Small. You know, I drink enough of it that my girlfriend calls it going to Jeffy's house when she finds me in the recliner, you know, a couple glasses in. She got me one of those ice cube makers with those big globe ice cubes, and you can't just have one glass with that. Now, that's a 3-glass ice cube. So, you know, towards the end of my third glass, when I'm a little less sharp, I've gone to Jeffy's house. I love Jefferson's. We've been doing a lot of partnership with Whistle Pig as well. We've got 6 bottles of rye whiskey with our name on it from Whistle Pig right now. 3 12-year rye, each finished in a different deep wood barrel. So there's a stout barrel, a barley wine barrel, and a rye wine barrel. That's part of their Sasquatch series. I've got those 3 bottles up on my fridge. And just yesterday, I picked up the Piggyback series, and they aged their 6-year Piggyback in 3 of our VSOJ barrels, or Very Special Old Jacket. It's a sweeter, much older, much fancier blend of our English Barley Wine Straight Jacket. And they did a 3-barrel treatment on that for Piggyback. So there's barrels 1, 2, and 3 of Piggyback. I just picked those up yesterday. Sorry, talking in English Mild. We got kind of like the minor hiccups. Jefferson's, Whistle Pig. I've got a Redemption Wheated Bourbon that I'm really enjoying. Anything from Buffalo Trace, especially anything Mash 2, gets my heart all flutter.
Awesome. Wendy, what's your final question?
So it's my first time at Revolution Brewing. What is the one beer I have to try?
Oh, that's up to you, isn't it? I mean, there's so many styles and so many preferences. If you're a Germanophile, you got to go with Rev Pils. It's a nice hoppy Pils. It's kind of a loose tribute to Firestone's Pivo Pils. It's a decidedly hoppy, but still very Germanic, traditional Pilsner, almost like semi-Italian Pils. You know, if you're bitterness averse, if you're a wine drinker who's been brought to the brewery with friends, anything from this Freedom series, the Fruited Kettle Sours or Lights Out. If you love, as Dustin Kroll from Firestone Walker taught me to call them big dumb beers. If you know, we got the Deepwood series on almost year round. If we don't have half the chalkboard full up with draft variants from a recent release, there's typically one or two lingering for those heavy hitter fans or fans of big dumb beer. Our English styles, Eugene Porter is my favorite dark beer of all time, maybe. Very unassuming, robust English porter, 7%. Our IPAs, Anti-Hero is still to me the gold standard of a hoppy, crisp, bitter, resinous American IPA from the late aughts. Fifth City is a fantastic, it's our Chicago pale ale. It's half as bitter, but twice as hoppy as our India pale ale, Anti-Hero, named for a Loretta Lynn tune. So it's not all just, rock and roll. Yeah, there's something for everybody, at Rev, and, almost all the time, it's a really well-balanced, and all the time, really well thought out beer. You know, we'll do exciting pilot batches that we have on draft in the back of the brewery. If you're on a tour, you'll have things that are just way too cost prohibitive to ever produce. Or you'll have things that are just too wacky that we're just trying to see what an ingredient does. And you'll have an opportunity if you come to the brewery and you go on a tour, to try one or four of those style of beers. Yeah, we don't like to have five Saisons on at once. We don't like to have five IPAs on at once. You know, the only time the chalkboard gets dominated is a barrel age release, really, is when there's, you know, two or three main releases and maybe up to four supporting draft variants. And that's for a single weekend at a time. But yeah, there's something for everybody. So I couldn't tell, you know, just a blanket statement. This is the one beer you have to start with because it doesn't exist.
You're on mute, but I feel like you just said Rob.
Rob.
Good call, Rob.
So as the saying with the millenniums go, I was today years old when I heard the proper pronunciation of D-Star. I've always like treated it with the reference of obviously with Star Wars, and it's always fell back to Death's Tar. So I guess I'm just curious, stupid question. When you hear people say it wrong, do you correct them or does anybody correct them? Or it's just pretty much, you know what? Fuck it. We're taking their money. They're enjoying the beer. I don't care.
It's closest to the last one, but that's not entirely correct either. So our owner is Josh Deeth, or chairman of the party, managing partner, Josh Deeth, D-E-T-H. We mostly say Deeth's Tar around the brewery, but we don't correct anybody when they say Death's Tar. But when we do a fruited variant, it's Death by Cherries, even though it's still spelled D-E-T-H. We're not that tied to it. We know it's a tongue-in-cheek reference. It's supposed to be fun. The way we avoid getting sued is by pointing to the spelling and the owner's last name. And that's really it. If you want to enjoy a Cafe Death, then enjoy a Cafe Death. If you want a Deeth's Tar or a Deeth by Cherries, enjoy it, please. And yeah, I hope nobody should be correcting anybody because we all say kind of the same. You know, what's in the brew kettle today? Oh, it's, you know, somebody might say it's Death. Somebody might say it's Deeth. They're all employees. None of them are wrong. And our owner says it both ways too. And his name is Josh Deeth. So yeah, there is no one correct, pronunciation, whatever makes you happiest. That's how you say it.
And I would probably say a C&D from Eddie Van Halen is a bit easier to deal with than a C&D from Disney.
Yeah, slightly.
To see you're naming it after the band Death, I don't think they're coming after you these days.
The punk band out of Detroit or the death metal band out of Florida?
Yeah, the death metal band out of Florida.
I love them both, by the way. I named a beer after a death song, the Florida Death, a number of years ago. It was a draft variant that I made for a friend for his birthday. It was, I think it was like Fist City with like a triple Eldorado hop. His favorite hop at the time was Eldorado. So I triple hopped a keg of Fist City and I said, I don't have any Eldorado. So I used Crystal because that's what I wanted to use and called it Crystal Mountain.
Nicholas, what's your final question for the man?
What beer is in your fridge right now that is not a Revolutionary Brewing beer that you're drinking right now?
Oh.
Or at some point this weekend?
Yes, I just got a fresh drop of Half Acre. We sold them some can ends, some can lids today, so they were kind enough to drop off a couple cases. And I jumped right on that Pony Pills and Fader. I tell you what, I've got some Off Color, a huge variety from Off Color right now. Always keeping some Metropolitan, some fresh Metropolitan in the fridge. I've got one last Generator Doppelbach bottle from Metro in the fridge. Always some Firestone barrel aged stuff. We've got some, I think I've got like 17 or 18 anniversary in the fridge that is not long for this world. I've been looking for some DBA. It's hard to find DBA in Chicago. But that's another all time. The whole reason we did the barrel fermented mild was an homage to DBA and specifically unfiltered DBA, which I put in the top five, maybe best beers ever produced in the United States. If I'm voting and yeah, it's local and Firestone Walker for the most part.
Daniel.
All right. You get told you can make any beer, any barrel aged beer that you want tomorrow for what you get to make next. What are you going to make? And is it going to be something new you haven't tried before?
Well, the cool thing is I'm already doing that.
Okay. Even better.
I can't disclose all the cool shit we're doing. That we'll disclose that in a couple of months here. It would probably be a barley wine. I've got a really cool idea for a stout that I'm fairly certain we're going to do. So I can't talk about that either. But it'd probably be a sweet barley wine going into a blend of American oak and French oak with both a wine and a spirit component.
Stop.
what about a barrel aged alt? Ken was just asking me if he thought you would ever do that.
A barrel aged what?
Alt.
We don't have alt as a base beer. Most of the time I'm just playing with existing recipes. We adjust the starting and finishing gravities to be in the barrels for how long they need to be in the barrels. And if we need the sweet component or we need the dry component, we're mostly manipulating the same three recipes, straight jacket, barley wine, rye way to heaven, rye wine, D-Star, Imperial Oatmeal Stout. We have done rye stouts. We've done milk stouts, but most of the time it's those three key players that we're kind of manipulating into brand new things. If we had an alt and we had some leftover volume, you bet your backside, I would be itching to get that into a bourbon barrel right quick.
It's the sound of probably Ken's heart breaking right there.
What's that?
Go ahead. Why do you repeat that?
That's the sound of Ken's heart breaking right there.
They're razzing on me because alt beer is like my favorite style of beer. So I think they're just trying to make fun of me, and that's okay because I'll take it.
He's got my barley wine, so I'm good.
Yeah, I think an alt beer aged in a bourbon barrel with some French oak added and aged in a cold place for a couple of weeks. I think you have your barrel age all.
Well, Marty, thank you so much for joining us. Revolution Brewing is located where?
2323 North Milwaukee Avenue is the heart and soul of Revolution. That is our brew pub in the Logan Square neighborhood of Chicago. 3340 North Kedzie is our production brewery and tap room. And that is in neighboring Avondale, Chicago. Plenty of street parking if anybody wants to come for a visit. Free parking as well. A little bit harder to park for free around the brew pub, but it is conveniently located next to the California Blue Line CTA stop. And so too is the brewery on Kedzie Avenue next to the Belmont Blue Line stop. So you can still take public transit, no problem. And that's our two locations.
Perfect. That's going to do it for this episode. Better on Draft. Thank you so much for joining us. So no matter what you think of your beer, we think it's Better on Draft. Have a good night.
Peace.